Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons. Those Klingons.
Welcome to the greatest discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. I've forgotten how to do this while looking at each other during.
How long has it been? We're in the room together for the first time. I mean, we did destroy the Falcon together.
True.
And that counts as a show, but it doesn't count as a show.
Yeah. I mean, we weren't facing each other when we did that. We were sitting on a couch facing the camera.
Never like to face you during a show.
This is, we're doing an IRL record. I don't know if this is going to be the norm, but it's something we like doing from time to time.
Here's the reap versus sow of the day. I get into my car and I'm heading over here and I'm like, yes, this is awesome. We're finally going to do in person again. And as soon as I get on the 10, I'm like, fuck, this is bad.
You got caught in a hell of a lot of traffic.
Yeah. I mean, most of it was in my part of the city. Like once I got downtown, it opened up.
That never happens. It never happens that it opens up when you get downtown.
I mean, that's what happened to me today.
Well, I guess this is a podcast. We're talking about Los Angeles specifics that nobody else can relate to. Should we talk about the Grove for a little while?
Surely people can relate to driving almost an hour to meet their podcast co-host for a recording session.
Adam, something got said on the last Greatest Discovery that was said without a ton of context, and I think we should probably contextualize. We just got off the phone with our beloved former producer, Rob Schulte.
That's right.
Who knows what he did and why he has to leave.
What he did is take another job, and he's leaving to do that job, which we're very excited about. It's a great opportunity for him.
Somehow, the taint of having worked with us didn't mess up his career for the rest of his life.
No, he's moving up. Not even a lateral move.
Yeah, but it's a big enough deal that he's not really going to have bandwidth to do side hustle type stuff work for us. But we are going to be needing a new producer on this show, and we will be making an announcement about that at some point soon. I know that a lot of people...
If it sounds like we're talking about you...
Maybe we are.
We could be.
Yeah, so our sincere thanks to Robs for being a great producer on this show, and congrats to him for moving onward and upward. Ironically,
and westward.
He is moving to LA to do this new job. And
I couldn't talk him out of it. Neither could you.
Yeah.
I like LA.
What's that like?
I like LA. The first draft of the Randy Newman song is how I'm feeling about it.
Wow. I'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
We'll definitely have to get some KBBQ with Rob when he gets out here. Show him how to live it up in Los Angeles.
It's an exciting time for Uxbridge Shimoda, I think. It's a big moment for us, but I think it is a great moment for us. It's going to mean new team members, potentially.
Yeah.
It's going to mean a different way of doing things going forward, but I'm turning to the camera when I say this. no one should be able to detect a difference in quality.
Yeah. Hopefully we keep it pretty seamless from a listener perspective. But
the same great taste you've come to expect.
Yeah. I know that Rob's really appreciates all of the kind words that have been said about him since he made the announcement. We talked about it a little bit on a Twitch stream recently mm-hmm. with him, and it was really fun to see like the comments just turn into an outpouring of appreciation for what a great job he did. I don't think Greatest Discovery would have gotten off the ground and started to fly the way it did without Rob's.
Yeah, it's true. He's a very big reason why this show has endured. And it's why I think we're feeling so good about its future.
Yeah. Well, we decided to do something a little bit different today. We've been kind of looking at lots of like Trek adjacent things in the off season.
That's what we do in the off season.
Yeah. And what we decided to do today is watch a Simpsons episode, kind of Trek adjacent. What is it? Season 4, episode 12?
Yeah, it's called Marge versus the Monorail.
Disco, Greatest Disco. It's a show about discovery. From the town of LA, we are flailing in the off season and just trying to find stuff to do.
That's great. What a nice kickoff to our first in-person show together.
I really like how many little ideas are in this era of The Simpsons. Like, this is like that era of The Simpsons that's a bit like, you know, classic Seinfeld episode where you didn't realize that this bit, and this bit were all in the same episode.
Right.
Like, the Homer as Fred Flintstone thing at the beginning of this is fucking great and has nothing to do with the rest of the episode, really.
It's funny how, like, the pace of jokes is best in breed fast,
yeah.
But it doesn't come with that same kind of mathematical comedy component that a 30 Rock does. Like, 30 Rock comes with that kind of pace, too, but you're building the joke in your mind when you hear it in a way that The Simpsons works a little bit differently. Like, it still hits as hard and as frequently, but you're not having to build the joke mid-flight.
Yeah. Rewatching this episode, I also thought a lot about how influential The Simpsons has been on my own sense of humor and, like, some things about my own sense of humor that I don't love, like how nihilistic it can be. Like, I think that The Simpsons is a show that has stood the test of time because of how much heart it has at the end of the day. Like, it's a show about a family that love each other and support each other, even though they make mistakes. But also, this is an episode where there's like a vat of nuclear waste and they're like, hey, what are we going to do with this nuclear waste? It's like, like Smithers and Burns hiding them in a tree in a public park.
I think it's full, sir.
That's ridiculous. The last tree held 9 drums.
I think in the same way that you felt informed by The Simpsons and your comedy sensibility, I feel that same way about Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
And seeing his writer-producer credit on screen activated that sense memory in me where my comic sensibility was formed in high school and college watching his late-night show.
Sure.
And I think you can sense the similarity in comedy in both this episode and other episodes that Conan was responsible for on the show.
Yeah.
And also what he went on to do on Late Night.
The like way they treat nuclear waste as like an incredibly almost like gothic nightmare that like all you can do is make fun of it and joke about it is a rhyme that I bit so many times in like drawing little cartoons as a kid, you know.
Do you still watch The Simpsons?
I do.
Yeah, my wife and I do too. It's interesting how similar the sensibility about Star Trek and The Simpsons is. The way that goes like, it was way better when it first came out. Or season 3 or 4 was awesome, but the new stuff isn't the same.
This isn't my Simpsons.
Right, exactly. And I've been watching new Simpsons and I love it.
Yeah.
Just like I love the old Simpsons.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, like, if I had to name a Star Trek cast that's my cast, it's Molly Shannon, it's Sherry O'Terry, it's Tim Meadows.
I was listening to Wayne Fetterman talk to Larry Wilmore on a podcast episode recently, and he is like semi-famously a teacher of stand-up comedy history at USC.
Wow.
And one of the points he was making during this interview was that the reason modern audiences can't get past comics is because comedy is made for the time in which it exists.
Right. Which doesn't mean you can't criticize it, but it contextualizes why something stops being funny in retrospect. Like, and I've heard like improv comics talk about this. Like, there's things that you can like absolutely slay an audience in a UCB theater mm-hmm. with, that if somebody shows that video from their phone to someone else 30 seconds later, they'll be like, this sucks. Mm-hmm. I don't know why anybody would laugh at this, you know? Like, and that's like the comedy of that instant. Like, it's funny because of what is happening in that room at that moment.
This isn't me trying to make the case for like, it was funnier when The Simpsons could do Apu.
Yeah. And I haven't, in my rewatch, I have not gotten to contemporary Simpsons, but I understand that they are recasting a lot of the voices
for I heard that too.
Characters of color, which is something that probably should have happened years earlier, but, you know.
You were talking about Mr. Burns squirreling away that barrel of toxic waste with Smithers, and the thought occurred to me that, like, for how many years have we seen the face of true evil is Mr. Burns?
Yeah.
And, like, the banality of his evil over decades has like kind of defanged him in a way, because like it's funny to watch him operate because his evil is so cartoonish, but everything he does is truly awful.
It's really awful, and it's always like literally for an extra dollar or whatever.
Yeah. Like, the wealthy should be laughed at the way we laugh at Mr. Burns. Like, I feel like it should be more instructive to society to laugh at them.
Yeah, they should drop slime on the sharks on Shark Tank.
Totally.
But like, I love the bit of them cramming the nuclear waste in the tree, and then it like pans up and the tree has tentacles and a squirrel with glowing eyeballs comes out of a hole and like shoots an acorn off a branch with its heat vision.
You can totally see Conan tagging that moment.
Yeah, like they throw away little bits like that in this episode that are just like 10 out of 10 funny.
I read that Conan just kind of arrived at The Simpsons fully formed. Like, he was the guy making awesome pitches right away.
Wow.
And like first drafting his work into rounded off perfection extremely fast. He's one of the greats.
Yeah. They were like, wow, this guy can really write this cartoon show. Let's give him a late night program.
Yeah. I love that Mr. Burns pays his fine in cash, like the joke in the Naked Gun movie.
Killing a gang member is only an $18 fine. Just mail it in.
He's got it in his front pocket.
Yeah. This is the inciting incident, though. Suddenly the town is flush with this cash. And the question is, what is Springfield going to do with it?
There's an obvious answer.
That answer isn't improve the town in any demonstrable way.
Yeah. Marge Simpson recommends using it to fix up Main Street. We get some pretty funny sight gags about why Main Street is so shredded and potholed.
I didn't find this part funny. Those read to me like Seattle City Streets all the way.
The city streets in LA, not a huge improvement on Seattle. But.
Yeah, but you're not getting studded tires in LA
like
you're getting in Seattle more than they should be used.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know why Homer had that grand piano strapped to the top of his car, but I mean, if you're going to strap a grand piano to the top of your car, you're going to want to put snow chains on also.
Lisa's fantasy about VR headsets in the classroom is hilarious to me because of how specific she gets with Genghis Khan and how friendly Genghis Khan is to her in that moment.
Yeah.
That's the joke to me, is that is this guy was one of the worst people in history.
Yeah.
And he's like,
you go where I go, defile what I defile, eat who I eat.
And Bart's fantasy about the killer ants, also good times. Apu wants it to be...
Were his fantasies about Skinner always so violent, though? That was the part that struck me about Bart's fantasy, was like, oh, did he always want to kill him?
I mean, I think that bad boy Bart Simpson, the Bart Simpson that made it a politically tricky maneuver in my house as a kid for me
to
negotiate being able to watch The Simpsons, you know, like, parents did not want their young boys to emulate Bart.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to do was emulate Bart.
Did you have the Bart Simpson doll with the plastic head?
I did not.
I totally had that doll.
I had no Simpsons stuff because it was like so verbose. Like I really
I bet your parents gave you the Lisa, huh?
I was probably like 11 before I got to really start digging into the Simpsons.
Man. Yeah, this came out January 14th, 1993. So I was 14.
I was 9.
Shit. Wow. I think those 3 years mean a lot.
Yeah.
For years, watching The Simpsons followed by In Living Color was a ritual for me. You missed out on In Living Color too then, didn't you?
I did. Man. I did. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
Take it up with my mom.
Oh, I will. Your mom loves me. I think I have that kind of latitude with her.
Yeah. Well, if you could build a time machine and take it up with her, you might have a much funnier co-host for your trouble.
This is cliche, but the old saying about humorists having hard lives or difficult childhoods being part of the reason they're able to be as funny as they are in adulthood, I think it would ruin you. I like the Ben we've got.
My childhood was hard in other ways.
Yeah.
Get to the money!
The meeting seems to kind of coalesce around this idea of improving Main Street, repaving, doing some urban renewal, it sounds like.
We could blow all our money on a stupid little street, but...
The people get so enthusiastic that they are tossing Grandpa Simpson up on their shoulders, despite the fact that he was arguing agin it. But I think he kind of like melts to the praise and adulation that he's getting eventually.
I personally don't think olds should have any say over the futures of their cities.
Yeah.
No, hold on just 1 minute.
But I thought this was great satire. Like, I think that like, you know, like I've heard from lots of women that they experience this at work, that they come up with a great idea and somebody will repeat it and get the credit for it because he is a dude. And like, it's very funny that like Grandpa Simpson not only is getting the credit and the praise for it, but he also was repeating it so that he could criticize it.
That moment did not hit me in the same way that it struck you. Enter Lyle Lanley, the Phil Hartman character.
What a great voice he brings to the table, and what a great talent.
Phil Hartman has those stories about him, not just from The Simpsons, but in everything, basically, that go something like, the perfection of a Phil Hartman performance arrives fully formed. The stories you read about him don't involve, gotta rehearse with Phil Hartman until he gets it right.
Mm-hmm.
He arrives ready to go on the first take, and it's up to you to like rise to his level. Conan compared him to being a coffee maker of comedy, where you just put the grounds in and you close the lid, and the expectation level is so high with him that you know exactly what you're going to get.
Wow.
At a premium level.
Damn.
What a great compliment, but also I read so often about this quality to him that it almost made him seem inscrutable to the people who worked with him. Like,
right.
He often was so charming and so prepared that a lot of people who worked with him for long periods of time didn't really feel like they knew him beyond that surface level.
Yeah. I feel like that smells a bit like Gary Shandling, who also was just like a brilliant genius who seemed to, like, almost like the closer you got to the center, the less certain you could be about where the center was.
It's so interesting because, like, such a big part of the Shandling philosophy was like getting rid of that center. Like, he was always working on dissolving that self within himself. I never read anything like that about Phil Hartman.
I only know this from like seeing documentaries and stuff about both guys, but it reminds me of what I know of Shandling. So
yeah, it is familiar in that way.
Yeah.
I come before you good people tonight with an idea.
He is here to pitch the town on the construction of a monorail. He's put these up all over the country. They're great for small towns. They really make them a destination.
Can I just say, coming from Seattle, one of the notable monorails in the country,
yeah,
it doesn't do shit. It is a total like tourist ride thing. It might as well have been the Great Wheel before the Great Wheel in Seattle. It goes 12 blocks, and it goes from Seattle Center to Westlake Center to like kind of malls. Like, Westlake Center for a long time wasn't even what I would consider a mall. But, yeah, like, what's so aggravating about it is the potential of it, especially as Seattle became more dense.
Right. Because, like, it's easy to put up poles in the middle of a street that a monorail can be on. And so, like,
one would think
if you wanted to make it a high capacity form of public transportation, it's actually, like, a lot more cost effective than digging tunnels and making subways, or digging tunnels and putting Tesla Model X's down there to, like, drive people around the fucking Las Vegas Convention Center.
For a time, there was talk about extending the monorail into several stops and making it more of a commuter platform, but it just never got traction.
One of the most frustrating things in the entire world is how unwilling voting blocs seem to be to expand public transportation.
Well, you're a total simp for public transportation.
I really
am.
Ben,
I imagine you would have been pro monorail in this town hall meeting.
I would have wanted, like, a longitudinal study about safety and environmental impacts.
Sure.
I mean, Lisa Simpson makes a great point. Like, why would we need it in a dense, small town environment?
If you're a big fan of The Simpsons, are you a simp for The Simpsons?
Oh, yeah, I guess you are.
Are you more of a simp for The Simpsons or a simp for mass transit?
Boy, hard to say.
Hard to know in what way you're more of a simp.
I think, you know, you drill down to the core of me. It's like a simp for blank,
right,
at my core. Like, and that's why it's so hard to know me.
Yeah. So Lyle puts this town meeting under his spell that involves a fun musical number.
Mm-hmm.
But then part of the spell he's able to cast is, like, he's given audience with Lisa's classroom. And I'm just trying to think of any other situation where a public works project would be
sold at that level. Yeah. Like,
and I also kind of want it to work that way. Like, if you can't sell the third graders,
yeah,
maybe your project shouldn't go.
Yeah, why aren't the Metro board members testing their ideas out in public schools all over the city?
Yeah.
Then, of course, the announcement is made that they need to recruit conductors for the monorail. And the advertisement for this is almost comically, I would say it is comically, targeted at one man.
Marge, I want to be a monorail conductor.
Oh, no.
I love that late night television quality that I wonder if you get anymore of the trade school program. Like, anymore, it's like a nursing school or technical college,
right,
vibe.
Yeah.
Like, be a dental hygienist.
Work in a doctor's world.
Yeah.
The end of the training sesh is Lyle Leland explaining the... the etymology of the word monorail and kind of randomly selecting Homer as the conductor as he looks in his notebook, which has just a drawing of stick figure Lyle Leland heading off to Tahiti with bags of money.
It's a real American Psycho type of scene.
It really is. Start to suspect that something might be amiss with this guy.
Yeah. I mean, all the scenes of cartoon Lyle with bags of money and then, like, a chainsaw going through Homer's skull.
Mono means one, and rail means
bone.
And that concludes our intensive 3-week course.
Stick figure Lyle Leland returning videotapes.
Right. I love Marge's do-goodiness being fairly consistent throughout the episode, right? She's the first one to raise her hand and be like, hey, Main Street. And then she defends Main Street thoroughly.
Yeah.
And then after seeing the notebook, she's like, I get a weird whiff off of this guy. Let's go check out North Haverbrook to see if the story hangs together. Like, did the monorail really make North Haverbrook great again?
Uh-huh. And what she finds is that the promise of Manaha, is that what the make North Haverbrook great again hat would be?
I guess so, yeah.
Is a lie. It destroyed North Haverbrook. People don't want to talk about it. The whole town has been rebranded around its monorail, and it's so bombed out and fucked up, and the monorail ran once, and it was a complete disaster. It's still dangling from its track.
There's such an economy of character development here, because you meet a few of the characters in North Haverbrook, and they each get, like, the first lady just gets the laugh, but, like, right. the next person you meet, you know everything about her in about two sentences, and I love that.
Yeah. Marge meets a German-accented scientist with crazy scientist hair who claims to be the person that, like, did all the engineering for Lyle Leland, who cut every corner in the design of the monorail.
Langley hired me to build his monorail.
I believe the common denominator of the universe is not harmony, but chaos, hostility, and murder.
Mr. Cobb, what can we do?
Why should he be trusted, this Sebastian Cobb? I mean, he all but admits he is part of the fault of this, and then he shows Marge the wreckage of the monorail.
Yeah. Well, he's like a tobacco company whistleblower.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know why he walks up to the, like, mom that drove her station wagon into town and is like, I have something horrible to confess.
There's no stopping this project, though, because the monorail's been built and we're ready for its grand opening.
This is where we kind of start setting the table for the arrival of Leonard Nimoy in the episode. An early shot here is when Sebastian Cobb says that, like, the last cut corner Leland cut was having Gallagher be the celebrity endorser when they unveiled the monorail in North Haverbrook.
That's great.
So we know that it's only going to be, like, marginal at best celebrities, and what we get is, like, a fake 90210 type character. Obviously, Krusty the Clown is always included in these Springfield celebrity events, and then Grand Wizard of the... the event.
Oh boy.
What do they call him?
Yeah, no, let's go with that.
Grand Marshal.
In all of his robed glory. Yeah.
It's Leonard Nimoy. And this is, like, the running gag here is that Leonard Nimoy is not that famous. Like, the mayor keeps saying the wrong shit about, you know, may the force be with us and stuff.
I think it tells you a lot about Leonard Nimoy's sense of humor that he would be game for this sort of ribbing.
Yeah.
Because the runway is the parade of unpopular stars.
Right.
And then the punchline
is Nimoy.
Yeah.
And he is perfectly happy to get roasted. And they roast the hell out of him.
Yeah. He wasn't even the show's first choice.
Wow.
They were like, George Takei would be great for this. And George Takei was like, I actually work on the Los Angeles Metro Board.
He does.
I signed a non-disparagement clause with them, meaning I cannot make fun of them in any way. And so Takei, like, wanted rewrites and stuff, and they were like, no, we're not going to rewrite this. This is actually really good.
Yeah.
And so, but Leonard Nimoy was game, and it's great that he was.
The monorail takes off with all of the celebrity passengers aboard, and Marge and Sebastian pull up just a little too late to call it all off. This monorail is really nice inside, though. Like, the bar car looks like a real fun hang.
Yeah, it does have that classic train sensibility in there.
Boy, if that Seattle monorail had a bar car, how fun would that be to just go back and forth from the Space Needle to downtown getting turnt on the fucking monorail?
It'd be great. Seattle can't have nice things, though.
You think LA has any good public transportation things?
I think you can drink on the bus in LA. I've heard you can do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's frowned upon, but it's not technically against the rules.
Coincidentally to this, Lisa sees Lyle leaving with a suitcase full of cash. So his escape has been insured to this point.
Yeah. The deal is the monorail is speeding up and its gears have fallen off and wires have broken inside of it and there's no way to stop it.
It's not a train. It's a missile the size of the Chrysler building.
And this kind of turns into a like an airplane parody where we've got like the mayor and the police chief and the control center arguing over jurisdiction and who is in charge of what when. And you've got like Homer in the cab hauling on the brakes, not able to slow this thing down.
Wiggum has always been funny.
Yeah.
He's one of the best characters on the show.
I love how ACAB the Simpsons have always been. Like they have never had a single ounce of respect for law enforcement.
They've done such a great job at making Wiggum such a sympathetic character over the years, and it's been like a long arc to that. He is an idiot and a dope, and he's bad at his job. But like, they've developed his character. Like, he is a sympathetic character later on. Like, I really do have a great affection for him.
Yeah.
I saw an episode recently, I think it was like within the last couple of seasons, where like, he can't bend over for some reason. So when he drops his gun on the ground, he can't go get it. And then his pants fall off and he can't pull them up. And then Snake crawls through his legs to escape while committing a crime. And he's like, this is the most embarrassing thing ever. And then he looks behind him and like a high school sweetheart of his spots him. And she's like, gee, Wiggum, I haven't seen you since graduation.
Oh, man.
I feel like any Simpsons podcast could just do a, this was a great joke.
Yeah.
Retelling like I just did.
Yeah.
But there's so many moments like that in any Simpsons episode that just, they're hilarious.
So, there's an argument over who's in charge of what when the town charter gets pulled. But eventually, Marge and Sebastian get on the radio with Homer and suggest that what he needs to do is find a way to make an anchor. Oh, and also there's the total solar eclipse gag where the monorail stops briefly because it's solar powered.
A solar eclipse. The cosmic ballet goes on.
Does anyone want to switch seats?
But then the eclipse ends and nobody has done anything to stop it from starting again.
Right.
But anyways, Homer pulls the M off the side of the train, attaches it to a lasso rope that a cowboy has on board. They drag it through town, and you know, it's like cutting through traffic. It cuts down Springfield's oldest tree, which crushes the log cabin where Jebediah Springfield was born. It severs some conjoined twins.
Yeah, really gets Dr. Hibbert off the hook.
Hibbert's probably pissed because he doesn't get to bill for that, right?
Right.
But it catches on the iconic Big Donut that is based on a real store here in L.A.
Yeah.
Whose owner is friends with my in-laws.
What?
I was once over at a dinner party at my in-laws' house, and I was talking to an older man, and I was like, what do you do for a living? And he told me that he owned that donut place.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I was shocked. Felt like I'd met a celebrity.
That's donut, big fun.
That donut place is hella famous.
Not famous enough, nor is the guy someone you'd like to give a plug to.
I can't remember what the name of it is. I don't eat donuts. Come on.
You look like you eat donuts.
Damn. I eat bagels. That's why I look like this.
You got a real bagel body.
I do. So the monorail is stopped. The people are jumping off of it, like onto those inflatable airplane ramps.
I really regret never being able to take that ride when I worked for a big airplane company.
Yeah.
I had a couple of near misses, not like actually being in, like actually needing to use one. But I mean, like for testing and video projects and stuff, I always wanted to and I never got to.
I always wondered if it costs like a shitload to deploy one of those.
It does, which is why, I mean, it costs a lot for an air carrier to deploy one unnecessarily because it means a plane is down for a while to replace it.
You got to pack it back in.
Yeah. It's so frustrating to pack up a sleeping bag. I can't imagine how much worse it is with one of those emergency slides.
So, you know, we should probably talk about the end of Lyle Leland, right?
Right. His plane lands for an unscheduled stop in North Haverbrook, and the pitchforks of the townspeople are out. Like,
an angry mob.
On short final when the plane's coming in.
Yeah. I mean, this is such a pre-9/11 joke, right? Because the angry mob can get on board with their pitchforks. They don't have to go through TSA. What?
Wow. Yeah. And Lyle Lanley savagely murdered on board an aircraft by a group of townspeople.
Yeah. It really cuts to the wide shot on Lyle Lanley.
Yeah. Yep.
The monorail stopped in the middle of town. Leonard Nimoy says, my job is done here. Gets called on that by Barney.
You didn't do anything.
Didn't I?
Barney, who was like project foreman during the construction of the monorail, I thought was a great bit.
Yeah. This is a great era for Barney jokes too. Like another like really nihilistic thing that The Simpsons does is how much fun they make of just being an alcoholic as a funny thing. Like when like Barney is like walking down the street and spats in a three-piece suit with like a watch chain in his vest. And it's like, that's what Barney looks like when he's not drinking.
Yeah. And like the moment a beer bottle touches his lips, like his hair gets disheveled and his clothes fly off.
Yeah.
I was poking around the Simpsons wiki for a while, and that's a great place to get lost if you're just looking for,
I bet.
Like, to reacquaint yourself with the greater Simpsons universe. I was shocked that Barney was listed as Homer's best friend. Is that how you think of him? Because it isn't how I think of him. I mean, I don't know who I would name as his best friend, really.
They went to NASA together, Adam. I mean, what could make better friends than that?
Yeah.
Hosting a Star Trek podcast?
Yeah, I mean, we're fine.
The final bit of the episode, the button, if you will, is a zoom out to, you know, the 30,000 foot view of Springfield, showing all of the other insane things that they've spent tons of money on. Another classic bit that I like could have guessed was in three different other episodes.
Right.
Like it's a little reminiscent of the Mr. Burns builds a thing to block out the sun idea. The like giant magnifying glass lighting the popsicle stick skyscraper on fire.
I mean, there's been so many episodes and so many storylines when the eclipse happens, my mind went to, is this also the episode where Mr. Burns blocks out the sun?
Yeah.
Like, it all just kind of mushes together.
Totally. They get it across the finish line, and I love the credits running over just the audio of people on the escalator to nowhere.
Yeah.
Falling off the edge of it.
Having as much time as they need to not go over the edge.
Well, you can get in big trouble for going the wrong way on an escalator.
That third guy especially, if you're like there's a pause at the top and then he goes over. You definitely have that third guy energy.
I do, yeah. I once got kicked out of the National Air and Space Museum for running up a down escalator.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Ejected on a middle school trip. I was in detention for a week for that one.
You had to go sit in the bus while everyone else enjoyed the exhibits?
I had to just stand outside because there weren't any like authority figures around from my school. So I just stood on the steps, and when they like got everybody together in the lobby and I wasn't present, they thought I had like run away or something. They were real mad at me.
Explains why you have it out for docents.
Yeah.
Every time we're in a museum.
Oh, I hate a docent.
Hate docents.
Hate them so much. Those docents. They think they're so great.
Ben, I know your great antipathy for docents is clear to all, but did you like the episode?
Oh, man, I love this episode. I loved rewatching it. I was really worried that there wasn't going to be, there might be like so little Nimoy in this that we're going to feel weird and embarrassed doing it for the show. But then I was like, no, this is just a fun episode of The Simpsons. And Nimoy does have a bunch of jokes, and there's like some Star Trek jokes among them. So I don't feel that bad about it.
I've been watching so much Simpsons lately with my wife that I was really looking for an excuse to do an episode for the show. And so I'll admit that like I had that reason. Like I wanted to force it into the show, and I'm glad we did. And I'm glad it wasn't like there was enough Leonard Nimoy here for it to count, I think.
I think it counts. Did you love it?
I did, of course. Like this is from I continue to love The Simpsons even now, but this is like to those that study such things, like this is from the heyday of the show. This was like the classic period where it remained for many years, and you can see why. It's so much fun, and it's so joke dense, and it's so smart and dumb.
Yeah.
Like it's not just smart,
right,
and it's not just dumb. It's that perfect sweet and salty that makes food taste good. It's the same quality that makes comedy work for me, I think.
It's crunchy Choco shells and soft tortillas in one box.
It really is.
You know what else I love, Adam, is Priority One messages. Let's go to the inbox, see what's going on in there.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Herbie Spicy. It is to Richard Vallee.
Sounds fancy.
The message goes like this. Average one is Yingling, and the good one is actually great. One of my favorite seasonals. Highlands Cold Mountain. What is wrong with this message? It seems like it began mid-sentence.
Yeah, it almost seems like it was like copy-pasted, but they didn't get the entire message into the form we have here or something. Average one is Yingling, and the good one is actually great. Well, I mean, I like a nice seasonal beer. I don't personally care for Yingling that much, and I know that will get a battery thrown at me.
Oh, shit.
By the Philadelphians, but... That's
one of their favorite Johns out there.
It's just not one of my favorite Johns. I like lots of things about Philadelphia, just not Yingling.
I like a Yingling or similar beer. Like, that is just my kind of beer that I like. Just a crushable lager / pilsner.
It's too bready for me. I feel like it's too bready to be crushable, and that's my problem. Therein lies my personal gripe with Yingling.
Wow.
But I bet they have a seasonal that's good.
Maybe you'd like Highlands Cold Mountain, which is what Herbie Spicy is talking about here.
Yeah. Well, I'm not trying to offend Herbie Spicy or Richard Vallee. They sound like fancy people.
Yeah.
And I hope you enjoy your seasonal Yinglings or whatever you're talking about.
Nothing wrong with any of this. Just two good friends talking about beers.
Yeah, that's okay. It's okay to like a beer that I don't like, and it's okay for me to not like a beer that you like.
You don't have to yuck someone else's yummy beer.
I'm not saying it's universally bad the way I say about sandwiches and cake.
You don't have to yuck someone else's John.
I'm just saying it's not my personal preference.
Not your John.
Cake and sandwiches are just bad. People should stop having them. Adam, our next Priority One message is from T, Earl Grey, hot. And it's to Captain Jean-Luc Picard, comma Starfleet, comma UFP. It goes like this. He's off, dude. Try another beverage. Hot chocolate? Ractigino latte, maybe? Have you ever had a Justa-Cola? Honestly, you have a replicator. You could make literally anything. But you have to make the same thing like 6 times a day. How about Crystal Pepsi? Frankly, I don't give a shit what you try, but try something. Figure it out. I need a fucking break.
I had not heard of Justa Cola. I looked it up. It was an energy drink made by PepsiCo.
Wow.
Between 95 and 99, and that explains why I never had it. I feel like I never really had energy drinks until college.
Was that a competitor to Jolt Cola?
You know what? Now that I see the branding, look at that. That does look familiar to me. The red with the black cat, like the panther.
That makes me really think it's a competitor to Jolt Cola.
Yeah.
That the extra caffeine cola of the 90s.
Yeah.
I remember being fascinated by weird sodas with extra caffeine, but I wasn't allowed to have them. Another thing that I was deprived of as a child. Did you ever have Raven's Revenge?
Nope.
That was a candy that was like a test tube full of powdered sugar.
Oh, no.
That tasted different ways. And I don't know if it still exists or not, but it was that was something I convinced my parents to let me get.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I cannot believe you were able to successfully convince your parents to give you test tube powders.
Yeah.
And you weren't allowed to go into a grocery store to have a canned beverage of your choosing. That's nuts.
A candy very much designed to evoke, like, designer drugs in the 90s. And somehow that one slipped past the gully. Anyways, thanks to everyone that sent in a P1, whether you are Herbie Spicy or T. Earl Grey Hot, we really appreciate the support. Head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron if you'd like to get a P1 on The Greatest Discovery. We really appreciate it.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell your story, tell the story of what you do and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. And we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself and Edward Larkin?
I'm going to give it to the conjoined twins who get separated. The gag of like, hey, this is great. High five. when the anchor cable gets dragged through them and easily does what Dr. Hibbert is explaining is going to be a long, expensive process is really funny to me. That's my favorite gag in the episode.
It's a great gag. I love the sound.
Yeah, good sound.
I think my Edward Larkin is as close to being an Edward Larkin as we've ever had, maybe.
Wow.
Because Lyle Lanley is Edward Larkin in this episode. He's trying to sell the town on his idea, and his idea is a bad one. and then
really
he
true.
And then he ends up being hoisted on his own monorail, you know?
Mm-hmm. On his own tribble.
Yeah. So I think I found their character compatibilities very simpatico.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Great Larkin, Adam.
I miss Phil Hartman.
I miss him too. Wow, well, it's been a long time since we've had to do our own end credits on this show. Have we ever done them?
I'll record them.
Okay. Get ready, listener, because here come the end credits of the episode.
Here comes today's special editor producer. It'll be a surprise every time. The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. The show wouldn't be possible without your generous support, and we thank those who go to MaximumFun.org/join to support The Greatest Discovery on a monthly subscription-style basis. Thanks also to Adam Ragusea, who made our theme and interstitial music. When he's not making music for us, Adam can be found cooking food on his wildly popular YouTube channel for his millions of subscribers. Be sure to follow @GreatestTrek on Twitter and Instagram. Those accounts are a regular source of fun thanks to Bill Tilly, our social media director. Fans of the show call themselves Friends of DeSoto, and you can make friends with them at the many fan-created communities on Discord at DrunkShimoda.com, Facebook, Reddit, and all the rest. At the time of this recording, it's the off-season of new Star Trek programming until Lower Decks comes back in August of 2021. In the meantime, we'll be here talking about a Star Trek-related show, movie, or comic book every couple of weeks. What surprises are in store in the weeks ahead? Find out next time on The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist-owned.
Audience-supported.